This is HBR episode 2436 entitled HBR Community News for November 2017 and is part of the series HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers and is about 87 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HBR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in November 2017.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This time it's community news for November 2017. Joining me tonight is...
Hi, it's Dave Morris. As usual, of course.
Hi, and for those of us who are new to this show, it's a monthly look at what's going on in the HBR community, and it's a regular show scheduled for the first Monday of the month. So we record it the Saturday before the first Monday of the month. And at this point, you traditionally welcome the new hosts.
Yes, I do that, and I had forgotten to check.
Shall I do it, Dave, as it's pronounceable this time?
Okay, you go for it.
The Alien Brothers Podcast, ABB. Alpha Bravo P have joined the network, and you too can join the network. As we are, it was an old strange month. Just to let people know what this show is all about, Dave and I are two of the volunteers that help out here on HPR, and we are by no means leaders of this community. We just facilitate it. And one thing I have noticed, Dave, has been that there has been a lack of shows from people. This month, have you noticed that?
Yes, we've had we have some holes in the queue which desperately need filling,
and thankfully Clatu has found lots of time to do podcast. He's basically carried the network this month, so there are still a few slots left. If you made a New Year's resolution this year, 2016, that you were going to record a show for HPR, we have a free slot in less than 4 days by the time you hear this. And then the next one after that is another 4 days after that, and another 3 days after that. So we could definitely do with shows, and this is the time of year where people are inside, and an ideal opportunity to nip into the tech cave and record a show for us. So today is Pakkasavand, Dave. It's actually Pakkasavand on Tuesday, but today we celebrate it. So
you need to explain.
That is when Sinterklaas, who came from Spain in a steamboat with his helpers, politically incorrect helpers perhaps, and they deliver presents to the children, and their presents were duly delivered, and one of those presents was a circuit board, Dave. Would you believe that? A component tester circuit board. I have no idea how Saint knew that I was looking for one of those, but there you go.
That's just astonishing. How can it be?
It's almost as if we live in a monitor, a surveillance state.
Yes.
So shall we go through quickly the shows? So giving some feedback so that people are aware that people listen to their shows. And today I will be drinking a regular old Hertog Jan, which is a beer that you find in the supermarkets along with Heineken and Krolls or something like that. It tastes okay, but it gives you a hangover.
Yes.
I have asked 5150 to give us a show on how to do a show about reviewing beer. So that was my show. That's where I am now, 5150. So if you could bring me to talk about the palate and the smell and the aromas, that would be nice. Not a bad beer, but it gives you a hangover. Okay.
Yes. Which don't the ones I'd like to know about.
The first show was by Bitbox. It's Personal Healthcare, wherein Bitbox discovers he is fat and can no longer find his feet. And this was inspired by an earlier show that the Information Underground did on health. What do you think of this one, Dave?
This is interesting. It's good. it takes some doing to come out and talk about these things, I think. Bitbox is trying to give up smoking and losing weight and do more exercise and all the sort of things that can be hard to get to fight. So I was very much sympathized with his challenge and his coming out in public with his intentions here. So good luck to him, I say.
Absolutely. Norrist says, fear and cold turkey. It took me a few tries to quit smoking. I was only able to quit after I convinced myself I would get cancer if I continued smoking. Fear and cold turkey work. Great episode. Can we hear more about life on the road?
Good idea. Shane Shannon says, all the best. The episode was very engaging. Thank you for sharing. Would you let us know in a month or two how it's going?
And I would also like to say, yeah, smoking is easy. I've done it hundreds of times, to quote Mark Twain. But I have done a show on this back in the twat days, actually. And it is basically cold turkey. You remember, yep. You are a smoker every single day. So good luck with it. And don't be put down if you fail, then yeah, just start again. Start stopping again.
Yes. I managed to do it. I was a smoker too. I managed to do it by having a bet with somebody else who was also trying to give up smoking. So we sort of kept each other in check, you know. Did you smoke today? No. Or yes. Or I'm winning it. That sort of thing. Challenge with somebody else can help a lot.
Whatever works. It's one of the best things that you can do to improve your health.
Indeed.
So, next day we had Mr. X with a What's in My Ham Shack Part 1. And I'd like to see more people go around those. As he said himself, I think your ham shack is, was it him or Steve? That your ham shack is never complete. So it's always a good time to do a show. Various different equipment. A lot of mobile handsets, actually. More than I would have expected.
Yeah. I was impressed by the number he had there. And they sounded very sophisticated and stuff. Though the digital radio, I made a note, sounded strange, which he did warn us about, but sort of strangely robotic effect with odd sort of side noises and stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was cooler.
Yeah.
It was really nice to hear it.
It sounds all technical and stuff, but we're spoiled by modern, some of the, you know, mobile phones and that type of stuff, I guess. Still, very interesting stuff.
Yeah, great show. Bullet journal to org mode from Brian in Ohio, and he describes how he's used a bullet journal, which I had not heard about before, and migrated to org mode in obviously Emacs.
Yes. Well, I found this really interesting. Though I must say, a bit of behind the scenes, he sent his notes in out of org mode, and boy, were they hard to wrestle into proper HTML. But yeah, we got there. I communicated with him a few times about it, but we got it there in the end. But the bullet journal thing is fascinating because it's about sort of keeping your stuff organized and, you know, keeping a record of what you're doing and what you plan to do and stuff. Some people go to huge lengths to make them really beautiful works of art. He was saying things like, well, it's once you've written it down, it's static and you can't then insert a bit, which is...
Yeah, copy and paste.
Yeah. It's, I quite understand. So I can see why he would have moved to Emacs org mode. Though it's a little sad in some respects because the, you know, the artistic side and the handwriting side and so forth is something I quite like, but I can see why you do this for efficiency.
I never have, unfortunately, don't have the motoric dexterity to be able to do those artistic works, but I've always appreciated it when I've seen somebody else who can do it. Corey says, you big tease. I'm very curious about your Android integration. I previously published a show about using org mode to create presentation PDFs.
Klaatu says org mode. This is really cool. My girlfriend does some bullet journal stuff, but I never understood what it was all about. Hearing about about it in this context is elucidating, though. Also, I'm really happy to hear that my Emacs episodes helped you learn to love Emacs. I am, like Croy, previous comment, eager to hear about your Android integration.
Yes, as am I. And I'm very impressed that he stuck with org mode for as long as he did, because I tend to get excited about some organizational methodology and then move on to something else and get to a point where I need an organization methodology to organize the number of organization methodologies I have.
Oh, I know. I spent all my working life fiddling about with different ways to organize stuff. A very early primitive database on a PC under DOS, for example, to manage my work and my team's work and stuff. And it was I spent more time fiddling with it than actually getting anything done, you know?
Yeah.
All of that sort of thing. It's very, very tempting to get lost in the technicalities of it. And I should imagine the artistic side of the bullet journal as well. But,
yeah. So the next show was about the HPR community news, which we did last month, and Windigo mentioned straight through cable. Just a quick bit of clarification. When Shane said he used a straight through cable, he was referred to the order of the wire inside the connectors. A straight through, also called patch cable, is used to connect a device to a piece of networking equipment like a PC to a switch. For connecting two PCs, you can switch the transmission and receive pairs and create a crossover cable.
Very good, very good. Nice and clearly put. I commented on this because I felt I'd sort of let the ball drop in the episode itself, saying, thanks, Windigo. I did actually know that, but my brain refused to come up with anything useful on the spur of the moment. I spent time over many years during my mainframe days making serial cables. That's RS-232 and RS-423, where this is pretty much the same. The varieties of null modem cables with crossovers was something I knew well, but I've largely forgotten now. I don't think I've ever used a crossover Cat5 or Cat6 cable, though, come to think of it. Maybe we need more shows on the details of connecting devices together.
And I replied how I would have expected myself to reply by doing a correction show, and that was HPR-2433.
Cool.
The next day we had a show, Transmeta Caruso, Fujitsu Siemens 42S210 thin client, and troubleshooting a Debian 9 install, where JWP did a basement cleanup and got his old Transmeta CPU up and running. This was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And he's earned a lot of geek points from me for going through this, I must say.
Well, yeah, absolutely. JWP knows a lot about all sorts of what I would class as obscure things. Boy, does he know a lot about them. He's certainly increased in my estimation in that regard. And that machine sounded like quite an interesting box, at least for its time it was. An emulation of an x86 device in a thin client, which sounded pretty good. Sounded very good.
And Plateau said, the first I've ever heard of this. Thank you for this episode. I thought it was really pretty cool for embracing risk, at least to the degree that I have, since my iBook G4 finally died. I've been mostly riskless lately, ARM notwithstanding. But this Transmeta thing sounds really clever and very obscure. Thanks for the history lesson.
And DRRTY says, wow, thanks for this, JWP. Upon further inspection, it was surprising to see that the Transmeta Caruso powered both the OQO Model 01, and it gives a reference, which I distinctly remember salivating over in 2004. Very good. This stuff completely passed me by. I knew nothing about this. So
this was a big deal at the time because Linus went off to work for these guys for a while. And it was it was announced that he was going to do something, and it was going to be a revolution, and it was going to change the face of computing. So, yeah, if we ever accuse any other companies of overhyping something, perhaps this would be an example that we could point back to. But it was really cool that he was able to salvage these and get them up and running and functional.
Well, I thought that was very impressive. He sounds like he had quite a struggle getting it to install anything with a with a DVD drive and stuff. But very impressive. He's certainly not a guy to be daunted by this sort of stuff, obviously.
Yeah, quite modest, actually. When you talk to him in person, he doesn't claim to be a techie at all. But, oh, man, oh, man. I don't know. You're going to have to call
absolutely
BS on that. And the following day, we had What's in My Ham Shack Part 2 by Mr. X, where he continued his walk through many meters and standing wave ratio generators and SWR power things. And this makes me very afraid, Dave, dummy loads and all sorts. Makes me very afraid of doing any ham radio stuff, I must say.
Wow, there's a hell of a lot of stuff there. It was sort of, I was sort of over my head with this stuff, I have to admit. It's interesting, but I'm not sure I want to get that deep. But I imagine one of the things that once you start, you get dragged into all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I imagine so too. Klaatu says, great impuls. This is exactly the kind of nut and bolt information I've been looking for in ham-related episode. Thanks. So perfect. Couldn't have said it better myself. Funny how Klaatu seems to be able to do that.
He has a gift of words.
He does. Alien Brothers Podcast, Season 1, Episode 1, Introduction. Meet the Alien Brothers, Casper and Rutger. Two tech junkies that take nothing sacred. Okay. And Klaatu, I think, doing a better job than either of us, commenting on this episode, says, shows like these. Do you want to read this one?
It's episodes like this one that make me want to quit podcasting, because I'll never reach this level of greatness. It's so disjointed and natural that I think it couldn't possibly have been planned, but it's so coherent and persistent that there's no way it could have been scripted. The characters in it have mysterious backstories. You saved my life, Casper. For example, they cut to empty commercial breaks. They come up with the name for the series in the episode itself. They talk about how they'll talk about movies, but then barely talk about movies. They talk about video games, but can't decide on how to categorize them. The hosts barely even know one another's handles, and yet they pull through. It's gripping and triumphant. This is some amazing avant-garde audio. Well done, Alien Brothers. Well done. That's a comment and a half. That is
a comment and a half. Anybody who wants to put Klaatu out of podcasting is, yeah. And the guys had a second episode, and they have had some, well, there are generally some problems uploading to HPR at the minute. We're working on that with Josh still.
Yeah, it's very mysterious.
We're basically under constant attack now. I don't know, somebody has just decided to really start using HPR resources 24/7, and yeah, I don't know. Whoever it is, if you listen to the show, can you please stop? Because it's not cool.
Human psychology is a strange thing.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you know, it's an RSS feed, so in fairness, it's not going to do anything to the people who listen to the show, because yeah, if they don't get it at 6 o'clock and they end up getting it at 7 o'clock, big deal. If you don't get the show today, you'll get it tomorrow. But it's just annoying for people who want to, who have taken the time to do something constructive, recorded a show and want to upload it. And then turns out they can't upload because somebody's been juvenile and using all the bandwidth or whatever. So, yeah, there you go. Anyway, thanks, guys. Keep trying. If this continues, we'll come up with we'll work around the problem and come up with an alternative means of uploading to HPR and an alternative means of posting. So it just makes more work for us, and that's fine. Unfortunately, that means we have less time to produce shows ourselves, which is a bit of a pain. So if you people listening to this show could record a few shows for ourselves, it would free us up so that we could devote some time to fixing all these issues. Anyway, netbooks, keeping an old friend alive by Biza. Why netbooks are not necessarily obsolete and how to keep them alive. And this one, I really am so sad that my Acer Aspire 1 has died. It was the perfect form factor for in the train. And you could just leave your own laptop running and grab this and bring it into meetings. It was an ideal little form factor, but it... I'm actually missing a hard disk cable on it, and I can't get a replacement. Well, I can, but it would cost more than the laptop. So
it's got into that stage of the cost of parts and stuff.
Yeah, I went on. Yeah. I don't know if I've told you this already. It turns out that the cable and the hard disk are from the original. You can use the same one from the original iPod. And I went on to, you know, one of the Dutch equivalent of eBay, and there was a guy asking 60, 80 euros for this thing, that, you know, one that doesn't work. And I go, but dude, why are you asking this? It doesn't work. Yeah, but it's a collector's item. It doesn't work. All right, fair enough.
That's the mentality. I still try and buy MP3 players when I can. I've got alerts on eBay for them. And the prices are things that are obviously been bashed around and smashed. They're twice the price of what they were originally to buy new. Yes, clips and clips
are 175 euros now.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous. Yes. I know, it's mad.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, go on. I was just going to say, I loved this show. It was brilliant. It was. Beezer has a great delivery. I love the way he does his shows. He sort of sounds very off the cuff, you know, talking to across the bar or something like that. And his content was brilliant, and I really enjoyed this. And I'm thinking of resurrecting my Triple EPC on the same basis, using Raspbian X86. So thanks to Beezer and to Tony for raising this issue. My Triple EPC, when I did consultancy work for a year or two, that was the machine I used to take to my client. I only had two clients, but I used to take that, and it was just perfect for setting up in a corner and hacking a bit of code for them, you know. And
exactly.
It was just great. I'd plug a monitor into it, maybe plug a keyboard into it as well, and it was brilliant. So anyway, do you want to do the comment?
I do, except I will need to say Dododo's dummy's name, which I can never do. So let's skip over that. He says, would love to hear you on LibriVox. Great episodes. Like to hear about keeping things alive. By the way, have you considered reading for LibriVox? And I think Pokey used to say it, that he sounds good even if he was reading the telephone book. Some of you whippersnappers wouldn't know what a telephone book is.
Yeah. It's he's right. I would like to hear more from being read or spoken by Beezer. More episodes if we can get around to them.
Absolutely. The following day, project interest. Lawson Bronk wonders how some projects die for lack of interest. And Klaatu says, attention, there are two types of people in the world. Those who are attention getters and those who are not. The right combination of obnoxious, overexcited, supremely networked attention getter plus given any given project results in zeitgeist. Whether that zeitgeist is justified or not, enter the equation. Zeitgeist procreates. The more people stricken with it, the more it builds in volume and size. And the more it grows, and the more people get stricken by it. What I'm saying is that you need to be a popular kid to champion your cause. The problem is, you hate popular kids, and popular kids probably don't know you exist. And by you, I mean me.
Yes. He's a great comment writer, isn't he?
So he's a classic, is Klaatu.
Oh, yes. Lawson Bronk says, popular kids. Merit will always be secondary to charisma when it comes to the success of projects and individuals. Routinely, people in professional environments that have no business being where they are and who can't even do their jobs correctly continue to move upwards. It's the nature of attraction, the cult of personality. When the media is involved, and media is involved in everyone's lives now to some extent, I don't think there's a solution except to seduce or blackmail the popular kids over to your side. That's a depressing thought.
Wow. Yeah, I do struggle with this one because, you know, you're working on this, the network here is helping out. And yeah, I don't know. I think there's so much stuff that came up in that whole episode. I'm really just trying to let it sink in so that we can great episode, lots of thoughts.
Yes.
there is no easy answer. I mean, if there was an easy answer, boom, we'd be done. But you know, getting people involved, getting people motivated, are you going to be a happy bunny, do people get tired of that, you know, what's your goal, or do you just plow your own furrow and see where you go?
Yeah, I don't know. It's I'm probably the wrong generation to fully appreciate all the nuances of this.
But the thing is, the two people who are commenting there are discussing it. If those guys, whatever they do, I will support them. I've bought their books. I've supported Klaatu and stuff. So no matter what these two dudes do, I happen to think they're. I don't know what it says about me. If I think those are the most popular guys in my sphere of interest, if you know what I mean.
And that's not a case of flashiness and those other terms that were being kicked around. That's a razzle dazzle and so forth and showmanship. That's about trying to judge true merit, I think, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it anyway.
So you read Klaatu's comments there, and they're artistic. Both of them I consider to be artists in what they do. And you know the fact that I release shows on the same network as them sometimes make me wonder, you know, should I put the show up? The Ironing Board ones, whatever, but you know, other ones that I'm serious about that I've done a little bit of work on, and then the following day you hear Klaatu doing a show, and it's kind of demotivating the ease at which he can come up and do a show. You listen to Lost in Bronx now in this car, and he's just blabbing away, and all his works, you think there should be somebody, you know, dictating his works for posterity next to him, which of course HBR is doing. But yeah, they're just, I think these two guys are operating on a different level, and to me they are the rock stars of I don't know.
But yes.
I get their point. Yeah, they're never going to be on, I don't know, where are all the cool kids now? I don't know.
Yeah. But the generational comment that I was making was really to say, I've reached the point in my life where I don't want to be following the razzle dazzle and stuff.
Yeah.
Never have been, really. I've probably been old all my life, but you know, I don't care. I really don't care about
that. And now you're
stuff.
At an age where you can say, I don't care. I'm an old, grumpy old man. Now go away and leave me alone.
That's right. Definitely grumpy old man territory. Yeah. So. Get off my lawn, would you, just while you're about it? Yeah. Anyway.
Open Source Gaming number 2. OOLite by The Dude. And Klaatu says, cool discovery. After a while, one begins to think one has heard of all the open source games out there, but obviously that's silly. Still, one runs out of place to look for new games until someone like you brings them to light. So thanks.
You just jumped a show there. You threw me totally.
Whoops, sorry. Kickstarter postmortem. Right.
I'm just thinking my brain's melted totally. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Clicked twice. This is Kickstarter postmortem, which I thought was quite depressing that Klaatu's Kickstarter didn't work out. One thing I think he missed in all the introspection was the lack of time that he gave to people to support it. You know, it takes quite a long time in order to get the news out beforehand. I'm going to be doing a Kickstarter. Are you ready to do the Kickstarter? And then have your people in place to do a little bit of publicity about it. You know, when he launched his show about intending to do the Kickstarter, he was already well into it before he got on board. And I would have expected him to be on all the other podcasts that are out there, get the words out to other people that would have been interested to get onto the gaming podcast. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yep. I agree. He did say in his talk, though, that he perhaps hadn't fully understood the way that Kickstarter works or the way that people respond to it and so forth. So he maybe sort of that was part of the mistake in a way.
Yeah, I think if you look at the normal Kickstarter, the way it works is there's an initial... there's an initial burst and then it tails off a bit and then it picks up again after a while. This is what usually happens. And I think that's reflected in the fact that the person who's going to do the Kickstarter has all their social media people ready and primed for the big launch, and then there's an initial spurge and then those people get the news out, and then it takes a while for that to feed back in to get the last push through. I also wonder why he went to a Kickstarter, not Indiegogo, who would allow him the option to to keep the money that he already had. So he had 85% of the total goal. You know, why not just set up an Indiegogo and then you got 85% of your total goal. Yeah, it mightn't be all of it, but it's 85% of it.
Didn't he say he missed it by 85%? I thought that meant he got 25%.
Yeah, still 25% of...
but it's something, isn't it? It's something.
Yeah. So my advice to Tlatu would be to plan that in 3 months' time that he tries this again and have ducks in a row and get people involved so that people have blog posts ready to go on the day of the thing and that there's a hashtag trending on Twitter or on whatever the things are and that he's got interviews lined up on the other Linux podcasts and gaming shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
Couldn't hurt.
No, indeed. I'm sure there's lots of outlets that would be quite happy to talk about it.
Absolutely,
let him come on
yeah.
and talk about it or whatever, you know. So, yeah.
And even there, like the he's already open source news and stuff like that. Seems like a cool one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay, following day, the open source gaming. Yeah, can we do that now?
Yes.
Okay, so we had previously Klaatu's comments about cool discoveries, and then Lost in Bronx had a comment. Do you want to read that?
Yes, indeed. Lost in Bronx says, "It must be me. I must only be running junkers. I've never owned a machine that could play games like this. I'd like to try it someday when I join the 21st century gaming world."
It's not just you, Lost in Bronx. It's not just you.
Yeah. I've never aimed for a machine that could run things like that.
Yeah.
My kids do, so I know it can be done. But I don't know what it requires particularly.
We had Interface Zero RPG play with Tlatu, Lobot, and Taj playing Interface Zero. And Claudio IM had a comment. "Wonderful intros to RPGs. Loved listening to this episode. My sons and I want to start playing a tabletop RPG like D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, but we weren't sure of how the gameplay would be like. My eldest and I have our characters created already, which was fun to develop, so that gave us a head start. Since I've never played anything like this, but I've always had an interest, I've had no idea how it would play on. Even though the type of RPG was different in this episode, and yet enjoyable enough for me to want to try Interface Zero as well, it made everything much clearer. This felt almost like playing a text adventure on a computer, even though it is exactly that, minus the computer. Lots of fun to listen to as a spectator as well. Thanks for the episode, and I look forward to more like this."
Yeah, nice comment, actually, yeah. And I certainly got an insight into what a game like this would be like and not really fully appreciating it. I live in my own bubble, you know. I'm sure my daughter would have put me right if I'd asked of it because she's into D&D. But as I probably said before. But yeah, I found it quite fascinating to listen to. And it was a good way of getting the message across to people who might be interested in this type of stuff, I thought.
Absolutely. I was at the end of the show going, okay, what's going on? And then at the end of the next one, which we're also going to be discussing, I was so into it. It was like listening to a audiobook, you know, with the discussions. It was like, what are you going to do and what's your character going to do? And it really put the whole role of Tlatu, the game master. Wow, what the amount of work that person has to do. You're really just privileged to be there because they've done a lot of work reading up on all the rules and having their imagination and the discussions and stuff. So fascinating. Loved it. I'm really going, no, it can't have been an hour. You know, that was, there were at an hour and then, no, it can't have been an hour. It was just so, it went by so fast. It was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I found myself a lot more fascinated than I thought I was going to be. And I was quite looking forward to the next one.
Yeah. What's going to happen? How's it going to end? So the following day, nothing grounds people more than XSL and XSLT proc by Tlatu. And here's how to convert XSL to XSLT. Do you want to read your comment?
Oh, yes, I forgot I comment. I said this was really interesting. I enjoyed this a lot. It was very clearly explained and the example was helpful. I tried to understand XSL back in 2012 when I was writing bash scripts, let me download music for Magnitude. They held their catalog in XML at that time. Now it's an SQLite database. And I used XSL tproc and XSL to extract stuff. I didn't find any very clear explanations of what could be done in XSL at that time, though I winged it by copying examples and using trial and error. Your links seem to fill in many of the gaps in my understanding, so thanks for them too.
And to which Klaatu replies, glad you enjoyed it. Sorry, glad you enjoyed it. I just can't wait for your LaTeX episode, although you will call us
LaTeX or something.
Yes, kaplach. Yes, obviously, proof Klingons obviously have.
It's caused some amusement, that obviously. But we got indoctrinated into this stuff. I think in the university I worked at, there was a group in the maths department, because mathematicians used what's it called, math tech or something, and whatever, there's a mathematical version of it, and they were very adamant about the right pronunciation and stuff, and we ran it on our Vax cluster back in the 80s and stuff, because we didn't have anything, there was nothing better, there was no Microsoft Word and stuff, we were using PVC micros to do other stuff. So, yeah, so that's must have stuck in my brain for some reason.
I said it before, and I'll say it again. You can still tell the quality of a LaTeX document over anything else. They just look so,
something,
so perfect.
Yeah, yeah. There's something very beautiful about it, actually.
Yeah.
That you
yeah.
can, you're restricting what you can do in LaTeX itself. If you go into tech, which is the sort of the thing it's written in, then you can do even more stuff, and you can change your fonts and do all sorts of stuff. It's a huge subject if you ever want to get into it. But yeah, it's exciting stuff.
And so, XSL and XSLT is on my list of stuff to do. But Dave, I haven't done it because actually this entire month has been very demotivating from the HBR point of view due to the number of issues that we're having. It's basically every morning wondering what else is going on or going wrong. So
I know it's been quite messy, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's nothing down to Josh. He's like you we go, if we, it's nothing about the provider, it's nothing about anybody, it's just constant stream of things going wrong.
True.
Just a little bit demotivating.
I must digress a second. The notes here, which contain XML, boy, did they cause some problems with Internet Archive.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they store their HTML as XML. So HTML with XML in it, stored as XML, turns into a bit of a nightmare. And getting it to behave correctly, I found a bug in my code for doing this, but they also have bugs at their end, which I've had to work around. So
we store it in a MySQL and parse it through PHP, which converts it as well. Oh, it's a mess.
Yeah, yeah, it's messy.
I wake up in the morning and get an email like that from you, and I go, "Oh my god, what are we doing now?" 8 pages of stuff, and you go, "Oh, Dave, what else?"
I was also going out of my nut that evening. I was trying to solve this problem, and the process of writing it down to say to somebody, even if I was writing it to Dev Null, I think it sort of gives you some relief. Unfortunately, you're Dev Null. Sometimes you get these messages.
And that morning, and as well, what's not helping is I had lots of problems with my SSH keys to their HBR site, so I've had to copy and paste my passwords in, and all the scripts that I have don't work anymore. So trivial things have become a pain in the buttocks. And then for some reason, so now the version of software on the website does not reflect what we have in Git, and I have no idea how that's happened, because I've been using Git to push it up to the website. So I am having to go through a merging process, and the hard disk that I have for that was over there, and it wasn't working properly, and I couldn't find connectors, and it was just you know, some days, some months, Dave, it's just one thing after another.
Oh, yes. So, oh, yes.
It's
oh dear.
Anyway, it's not. And then, you know, you have the issues with some. We have enough issues as it is on daily life without some plonker deciding to make our life a misery because they're using up some voluntary resources that somebody is paying for out of their own pocket. Thank you very much. You wonder. Anyway, if they could do a show explaining their motivation, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you'd wait a long time for that one, but
yeah, we can but try. And by the way, we've had over the years lots of hackers who have found stuff on the site and have given us time to deal with it and moved on, and we appreciate that. And that is definitely something that makes you a hacker as opposed to a plonker. There you go. The following day, Lost and Bronk shares some thoughts about the need to talk about addiction. And yeah, this was a fantastic, fantastic episode. And he's right. Yes.
Yeah. It's hard to summarize. It's certainly true that the whole issue of mental health is something which is surrounded by all manner of taboos.
Yeah.
And of course, the addiction being one element of that is even more so in some respects. But the Victorian view of all this sort of stuff, I think, has a legacy. And listening to a mental health program on the BBC the other day, and they were talking about how they were using terminology from maybe my childhood about mental health issues, and we're pointing out these are now no longer used because they're a Victorian legacy.
Yep.
And, you know, it's...
And I mean, in fairness, at the time, they were doing their best, but, you know, things have moved
on.
You know?
Sure.
And the logical part of me goes, well, you know, if you get a footache from time to time, you should... you get a pain in your foot every now and then, you should... You should not be surprised that something in your head goes wrong from time to time. So, you know, just general mental health. But I mean, his topic was about addiction, and I've seen it. I would argue, though, that there is no such thing as alcoholism, you know, being able to deal with it. I've seen lots of families where it has just eaten away like a cancer, everybody else. And, the person in question continues on and continues on and continues on and continues on. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible disease, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Sucks. And gambling, even. I've seen, horrible, horrible things.
Yeah. And back to the smoking thing as well. You know, that's also a deadly, deadly business.
Yep. Cool. Not all. Obviously not cool. Just... If you are, if addiction does affect your life, that is definitely fallen under the category of things of interest to hackers. Talk to us about it.
Indeed.
Following day, Server Basics 101. Klaatu endeavors to explain the basics of server administration. Why has this not been a series before? This is beyond me.
Yeah, I know. It's so obvious. And you think about it'd never occurred to me to do anything like this.
I know Klaatu has been taking over the network this month, which is great because I haven't needed to do a call for shows. But there is now a call for shows out. We need shows. We're running out of shows by the end of next week. So, yeah, a few shows would be no harm. Also, have a look at the About page. Yeah, go to your host page on the About page. Click on About and then on Hosts. And if the number 2017 doesn't come next to your name or worse, you can't find your name on that, then that would be an ideal time to send in a show. And if you have any, if you get any errors or anything, or if your file is greater than probably 100 megabytes, I think, if the file that you're uploading is 100 megabytes, just tick the option URL or something, uploaded later, and then email the admin or myself, ken@felon.ie, and I will figure something out how you can get the show to us. There's plenty of ways you can SCP it to my own server or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I got FTP to work, but it has its own issues. You have indeed, to switch off passive mode.
Oh, anyway, Shane.
That's for another time.
Shane Shannon says, thanks, I made a connection. This is so silly, but I had not recently realized the aptness of the term server and client. You explained so clearly that the server computer serves a client computer. Thank you. Yeah, it's I remember the day I had that particular spark of insight myself. And it my first day on the job either. It was well into it.
Well, I came from the background of mainframes where there was one computer. The university had one computer. And you know, so the server-client thing was, nobody caught use of those terms. And then, you know, things changed and people had computers on their desks and stuff in the center, et cetera, et cetera. And those sort of concepts crept in an insidious way without really being all that well explained. And did you ever encounter the X system in the early days where the idea of server and client was backwards?
Yeah, and that's exactly, in investigating that, I twigged. That was exactly that particular day. It was when I first came across the X, because I was going, the server's running on my machine? Oh, bizarro.
Yes. Anyway, 0xf10e says Solaris. Nice start, Klaatu. I'll make sure to point junior sysadmins to this series. So was the third option, which isn't really around anymore, Solaris? Because OpenSolaris fork Illumos is in fact 6 years after Brian Cantrell's fork. Yeah, the rise and development of Illumos. Usenix talk. Well, I'm having difficulty passing.
Yeah.
And he refers to a link there. Still around. It's the base for distributions like Joyent Smart OS and the database appliance Delphix, and upstream for OpenZFS too. So, yeah, don't forget Solaris.
Yeah. And we've had interviews with the Solaris and the Illuminos folks. Oh, it's FOSTEM, actually.
Yes, and indeed.
ZenFloater2 said, the OpenBSD user, I've been running servers since before you were born. Sorry, I have to go back and do that with an accent. I've been running servers since before you were born, so 1975. And I'm enjoying this series. It's good to have a series on these taboo things, you know, ... Excellent. Yeah. Oh, by the way, if anyone wants to do my accent or how you perceive my accent to be, feel free to do so.
Yes,
Jesus. Yes. I sometimes do impressions of my own accent at work. Anyway.
There was a fake Ken Fallon around at one point.
Yeah.
And who's now vanished, I guess. That's a shame.
Git blobs. Klaatu talks about Git Media and Git Annex. I don't know. I have a complete brain thing when it comes to Git. I have a whole series of commands that I know how to do, but I really just do not get Git. I don't understand it. I'm man enough to say it.
Yeah. I have. I use Git on a daily basis, really. But it is a case of just doing the magic thing that you do that you've just done lots of times that don't necessarily understand.
It's like the three commands. It's the escape colon WQ exclamation mark. I've been using that for years and having no clue what it in Vim, no clue what it did, except this was the magic key thing that you needed to do to save your file and exit in Vim until you did your series. So I guess we need a series in Git, guys. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, it's a big subject. It's a big subject. But
well,
yeah,
and we have lots and lots of slots, Dave. We have 260 nice, fresh new slots coming up on the 1st of January, Dave.
Yep, point taken.
However, that said, I do have needs to do this very, 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 very same thing because I've got a whole group of test scripts that involve ingesting large movies and, you know, 4K and 8K movies and HD and SD, and I don't want them in Git, but I do want them somewhere where people who are running them can get them if they need them. So I have absolutely need for that.
Yeah. It's not a thing I've encountered. We did not use Git at my work. Well, I did, but nobody else did, and they refused to accept that it was a way to do stuff at that place. Which university is a strange organization. Anyway, but I can understand why it's necessary and appreciate its existence, etc. So that was very good.
So the following day, we had the Interface Zero RPG play, and all I can say about this one is that why did they stop at this? And this is exactly why I didn't want to get into this sort of role-playing games, because I just could not put it down after an hour. You know, it would be an all-nighter or nothing. I need to know how it ends.
Yeah. It's very much that, isn't it? You want to know. It is like reading that interesting book, you just want to go right to the end, and then you realize it's 4 a.m. or something.
Yeah. The only problem with that, though, is if you've got an interesting book, you can do it yourself, whereas this, you're keeping people out of their beds, you know?
Yeah, I know. Like I say, my daughter's into D&D, and I think some of her sessions can be long.
Yeah, the important word, though, is student.
Yeah. She's in her final year now, so I hope she's not doing too much.
Yes, that's on hoovering the floor. There's two things that you do before your exams.
When I go and when I visit my daughter, I always take a vacuum cleaner because they never do.
I never had the house was always spick and span when it was exam time because anything to avoid studying would be, clean the fridge.
I wish. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. They seem to do less. Anyway.
No, that's a good thing, Dave. Good thing. So the following day we had scanning books. I explained how and why I was scanning school books. And, you know, this is exactly my point. You put up a show like this after all the shows of Lost in Bronx and Dave and all the people this month, Mr. X and whoever, and you go, why did I bother? Oh, well.
I don't agree. Everybody's show has its own merits, and I thought this one was fascinating. So, no, I don't think you should look at it like that. And I was delighted to know that there was a thing called graphics magic as well as image magic, because I'd done a show on image magic at some point, and graphics magic looks better. I hadn't realized that image magic had sort of stuck and gone a bit moldy along the way. So, good for that.
Yeah, actually, I heard that I don't know if you listen to the podcast with the guys who published the magazine, and they're called, name escapes me now.
Oh, you Full Circle stuff, is
no, that not the other of? Magazine, no. The one they did the open source collection, Linux. Crowdsourcing, and then
you mean Linux Voice?
Yeah, Linux Voice, of course. Thank you. They had on one of their finds of the week or whatever was a graphics magic. Somebody from Graphics Magic had got in touch with them because they had mentioned Image Magic, and they had said no, the project had frozen and that they forked, and Graphic Magic is the one to use. And then bam, and I looked, and it was already installed. So, and a lot easier to use, a lot clearer documentation.
Yeah, very
nice all around.
Yes, I wrote stuff in Perl using the Image Magic library, which was strange but it worked. So I'm interested to find out what the equivalent is in Graphics Magic. Very good. That was a great find. Thank you for that.
And 24/31 Information Underground Local Control, and I'm really glad Information Underground has come back. And wow, it's this sort of thing makes you realize, you know, the way Americans think about democracy. It's more so than, you know, you see the two horse race that is the presidential elections. Yes, I know there are lots of other candidates that don't get a word in, but then you see the amount of democracy there is in the local areas. It's fascinating to see.
Yeah. So there are local aspects of British society as well that often get things done that wouldn't get done otherwise. So that was how I was sort of interpreting what they were talking about. And also there was a lot of mention of union activity and stuff.
Yep.
Now, I imagine unions are very different in the States. I was quite an active union member when I was working. I've been on picket lines and been and protested outside Parliament and things of that sort. Not to any great effect, but you know, it's hard to know. But if we hadn't done it, would we have achieved less? I don't know. So, but I don't know. I can't map the one to the other very easily.
Fascinating topic. People, do not be afraid to do shows like this. Do not be afraid to to assume that people will know about things in your neighborhood. Do not be afraid to do a show on how local democracy works in your own area, or not. How you know, if you happen to live in a country that frowns upon democracy and you feel that your system of government is a good system, or you want to tell us about it, then feel free to do so. That is what HPR is all about. So Zen Floater 2 says, benevolent dictator of the magical forest. I was amused at the Debian comment about not being transparent. I will accept that. I don't use Debian anymore since Crunchbang has ended. A tear in my own eye. Debian is a community-run distro. So is FreeBSD. So is NetBSD. So is Gentoo. So is Void Linux and Arch Linux. But of the non-transparent distributions such as OpenBSD, which is run by a benevolent dictator known as Theo, or Slackware, which is run by a benevolent dictator known as Patrick, they too make really solid distros, which a great many people love. But as an aged old man, it does make me smile at your comments of the floss youth who complain they simply don't like non-transparent government, yet they stand by their monarchs. Derived OSs. Not that I'm complaining that you're human. Very nice. Touche, sir. Touche.
Yes. I had difficulty parsing that when I first read it, but I think you make well a good it. Point.
When I read that first, I was going, where is he going with this? But yes.
Yeah, nice. No, he's right. He's right. That's quite an interesting insight there.
Right, the following day, living with Nokia 6, an upgrade, and to which Dave Morris replied.
Well, Tony was directed one bit of this to me because I'd asked why he was moving on from his OnePlus One, and he said because he can't get 4G on GIFGAF. And I said, cheers, Tony, thanks for the clarification. I'm also on GIFGAF, but wasn't aware of the 4G issue and the OnePlus One. I scarcely use my phone, and I'm currently using a fraction of the data I pay for each month, so I don't see this being a problem. So I'm really actually just digressing. Beza says he doesn't even have a smartphone, and I went, wow, I should do that, because I don't need a blooming smartphone. It's more of a nuisance than anything else. So,
have you seen that Raspberry Pi one, the Raspberry Pi Zero, and their
building? I haven't. I've not looked into it in detail, but I've heard of it, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I so want that. Especially that would be good. Allowing myself an extra 6 hours when I go through customs.
Oh, wow.
It's my phone. Anyway, RWA says, Nokia 6 update. I was wondering how the Snapdragon 430 processor is doing with the apps you run. The Nokia 6 interested me when it first appeared, but I had concerns about the 430 processor. Everything else was a major plus for me. Screen size, fingerprint scanner, NFC, and metal build. Any comments, especially compared to other mid-tier phones like the Moto G5S Plus?
Yeah, it does sound like a nice phone. But, why do you need 4G? Just get better, faster access to you? Is it high speed?
Yeah, it's
better bandwidth.
Better bandwidth, yeah. It's pretty cool. I use it quite a lot, even for setting up hotspots and stuff around that the kids can connect. Everybody connects via my own phone. Yeah,
my son's still away in faraway parts. He's in New Zealand at the moment, and internet there is pretty crappy where they're going anyway. So backpackers, hostels, and stuff. So they're using a phone's hotspot while they're there. So you know, yeah, I do appreciate that. But I don't do that sort of thing. I'm too old.
Yeah, I don't know. I this is what interests me about the doing it on a Raspberry Pi Zero, because I want to be able to do is tether my laptop usually. Although that said, now I am using my phone more and more and more, not because I really want to. It's more that I'm forced to with the price of MP3 players. One of my MP3 players, the battery blew up, and I can't get a battery, and I'm not paying $175 for a used device.
I know. I know. A phone, but I'd like a little phone that I could keep in my pocket, like a shirt pocket or something, because a OnePlus One is a great lump of a thing to lug around, to listen to things. It's a ridiculous size thing for me.
It would be nice to have that little Raspberry Pi Zero phone. if the battery life was quite good, and you could do tethering to like Acer Aspire 1 or something, and then so there you have your external device with a keyboard that you could do some real work. But yeah, I digress. Anyway, do you want to read Tony's comment?
Sorry, sorry, Tony. I got completely lost there. Reply to RWA Re app performance. I've been using the phone now for over 2 months, and the performance is better than the old OnePlus One. All the apps I use are snappy and responsive with no lag that I can detect. I can't compare to any other phone as I've not used anything else during this time, and I'm not a mobile gamer or any type of, for a fact. So I cannot say what game performance is like on the phone, but I think it stands up to most mid-range devices well. If it hadn't been for the 4G issue, I would probably have stuck with the OnePlus One, just flashed it and saved myself £200. £200 million.
£200 million? That's a bit expensive.
That's a hell of a phone. But I'm happy, and my wife will get an upgrade to her Nexus 4 at some stage.
Cool, phones. Interesting one. Keep them coming about phones. Ah, yes. The following day, you were right, I was wrong. Ken eats humble pie, where I correct the inaccuracies. I really, really don't like being wrong, Dave. But I'm so often wrong. That is why I don't like to be wrong. It just happens so often and all the time.
I've learned to live with it personally.
No, I can't. I really can't. And I can't. I trouble over things that I've said to people like 15, 20, 30 years ago now at this stage. You know, I've just found a piece of information that I've proven like.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. Yes, yes. That thing that you suddenly find that confirms that you're an idiot. You know, you thought you were an idiot, but now you've got confirmation. But
like,
you know,
slagging off one of the kids at the school that no, Starsky and Hutch's car is not red with a white stripe. It's gray with a white stripe, isn't it, guys? Yeah, it is. Spot the one guy who had a colour TV in class.
Oh, dear. Yes,
oh,
yes.
God.
So easy, so easy.
Anyway, Shane, sorry for getting that wrong. Thanks, Windigo, for getting it right, for putting me right. Oh, there'll be more of these, don't worry.
But there's some quite interesting stuff. I haven't read all your links yet. I haven't had a lot of time since that. I heard that one. The whole Twisted Pair business fascinates me because we ran Twisted Pair all over the campus when I first went to work at that unnamed university. Would you believe when I left there, I got voluntary severance, which means they pay you to go away. And I had to sign a thing that said I would never disparage them. So I'm always cautious about even mentioning them. So
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I could probably do it. I doubt whether anybody listens to HBR. But they had Twisted Pairs all over the campus. It was sort of run from lampposts. So a guy sat on the far side of the campus typing on a terminal. This was terminal, sort of mainframe, over 4-core Twisted Pair RS-232. Would be very prone to atmospheric issues. And the day we had a lightning storm on the campus, it just blew all of these things to smithereens. All the line drivers had all the chips had little holes in them when the lightning hit it and stuff. So. And the time when I won't go into the, I'll stop in a second, but the one where we spent months trying to debug one, only to find that the guy who'd set it up had swapped the Twisted Pair. So it started out with the Twisted Pair, and then one wire went down another Twisted Pair, and the other one went down another Twisted Pair, and then they joined back up again somewhere else. So it went through cabinets and stuff, and he just got lost, or he was having a bad day or something. And,
yeah,
and
it can happen.
We couldn't work out why the signal is so crappy, even with line drivers and everything on it. So it was, So Twisted Pairs make me twitch.
I put in a link to a video there on balanced audio noise reduction. If anyone's ever wondered why you would have a phantom power in a speaker or in a, no, I'm not even going to say this because I'm not sure about this, so I'm shutting the hell up now before I have to do another episode. If anyone wants to do an episode on phantom power on microphones, why you need them, please do that. There's a balanced audio noise reduction video, which is quite interesting. I linked to in that show note.
It's some interesting subjects there. Shall I read Frank's comment? Because it's very short.
Yeah.
Frank says, best title ever. See above, and as the body of his comment is, see the title.
You're right, I was wrong. That one,
yeah.
There was a that comes from a there was a back in the day when GSM networks were starting up in Ireland, there was like a new provider, and their selling point was that they had voicemail, but nobody had a clue what voicemail was because nobody had answering machines either in Ireland at the time. And they had this ad on the newspaper or on the radio, yeah, and the premise of it was, you know, this guy, or obviously somebody, might be a guy, could be a girl, I don't know, but they were dialing in their voicemail. You have one new message. Boop. Hi, John. Oh, it was a guy. Hi, John. I'm really sorry about last night. You were right. I was wrong. Doop. Hi, John. You have one new message. And he just kept playing it over and over and again. You were right. I was wrong. You were right. I was wrong. excellent. And that, I think that one ad in itself introduced the whole concept of voicemail for everybody.
Yeah,
in
yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
That's rather nice.
I'm fine.
Yes.
I tried to several times to look for a copy of that on the internet, but alas, can't find it.
Yes, yes. There's a certain age where things like when they reach a certain age, that they don't seem to be on the internet at all.
Actually, I think the internet is such a fickle thing. It maintains memories of things being on the internet, but the things themselves are actually gone and gone forever and will never come back.
Yes.
XKCD has a very good cartoon about that, a very good thing about that, where he says the library is pretty much the one constant that you have where you can get access to information, you know, over time it disappears. But we've seen that ourselves on our shows, Dave. You know, part of the work that you do on, and that you don't get half enough praise for, is the archive.org work. And a lot of that is going back to older shows, and the domains that they were referring to have ceased to exist. The images are gone.
Yes.
The audio is gone. You know, a lot of the old podcasts that we used to listen to just gone. Phew. If it wasn't for the work of you know, the Internet Archive and what's it? My memory's gone.
You're thinking of the Wayback.
Yeah, the Wayback Machine and things like that. That, you know, we'd be the archivists out there who are scanning books and archiving this stuff. And you know, I don't get me on my high horse about copyright, which is fine and dandy as well, but I think that the scales have balanced too much. There should be a requirement that if you have copyright, if you're claiming copyright on a piece of work, then that piece of work should be archived in three places. That's what the Trinity Colleges were for, that you got a book, you put it into Cambridge, Oxford and Dublin, that if any of those places were damaged in any way, that you would have a full copy of the book. And that happened during World War II. Both libraries in Oxford and Cambridge were destroyed or were damaged, and quite a lot of the works only survived in Dublin because they were neutral at the time. So very important stuff. I don't think we have a lot of lost works as a result of that, but whoa there, Nelly, as I get off my high horse and continue talking about the audiobook club, PC Harris Cybrosis. Dave, can I get a...
Cybrosis, I think you're right. Yes,
whoa, gee, there's a first.
The synthesizer didn't like it at all, but, no. Yes, Cybrosis is what I would... It's what they thought it was as well, so it's pretty good.
And quite a lot of these shows are in the queue, and I would like to thank very much these guys for coming back, the Audiobook Club, and Pokey and the guys over on Urandom. I'm very sorry for that trick that I pulled on you. It was not nice. And... So I think that was it for all the shows.
The I was amazed. I hadn't realized these were so old, these audiobook clubs. Because they were talking about how they just heard my show on How I Make Coffee.
Yes, it's a while back.
What? What's going on? they were concerned that putting them in a vacuum jar would suck the life essence out of the coffee something. But I don't think so. There's a whole load of shows that could follow on from that one, I'm sure.
And they've added a link to the book itself where you can follow on from that. I do like the book clubs. You know, I've always thought it a bit. Wouldn't it be cool to be a member of the book club? And now I am.
Good.
If more kind of standing outside in the front lawn looking in type of way than actively participating.
It's good. They do a great review. I think they I do enjoy listening to them, but I can't say I would. I'm going to be rushing out to listen to this,
no,
this book,
didn't,
though. Didn't sound that desirable, but maybe I should give it a try.
Give it a
regardless,
go. Yeah, and then go.
Because make up my own mind. But fair enough. That's what reviews are all about.
Note to volunteers, comments marked in green were read in the last community news show and should be ignored in this one. I don't know why you don't leave those in, Dave, because no, really, that's kind of cool. Very meta. Okay, completely ruining the whole professionalism, this. You get the full Monty here, guys. Comments on this show, what I'm talking about is Dave has put in a comment in the comments to tell us not to mention certain comments. It's been a long-running thing. But there were 44 comments in total, 18 were from 9 previous shows. The first one was comment number 4, Information Underground 21st Century Superstar, and this was by Klaatu, who commented on the discussion. Hey, Blind Ape, Seth Frightening having a flying nun sounds probably accurate. I found the album in a random Kiwi op shop. Oh yeah, this is about, he mentioned a Kiwi band, and Blind Ape had commented about where, more with more information. Klaatu continues. Shortly before moving to New Zealand, I found a Chris Knox CD on the street, literally. It was lying in the gutter, and absolutely fell in love with not only Chris's music, but also that general sound and feel. I've been really enjoying discovering Kiwi music and Kiwi-a in general.
Kiwiana?
Could be. More than likely, probably is. General rule of thumb, my pronunciation is probably wrong.
Well, you don't mind me interjecting.
Not in the slightest.
So the next one was a comment 9 on HPR 2378 Why Doc Book. Klaatu's great episode on Doc Book, where Klaatu is commenting... KWNPSA. I took a look at the page, Bob. Good stuff. One addition, there's a missing entry in your text editor section, GNU Emacs. Probably just an oversight.
Hardy, hardy, hard. They can't leave it, can they?
Well done.
Frank Bell's episode, Free Weights and a Bicycle, BJB had a comment about a 5BX and a 10BX memory lane. When I was a preteen, my mom bought a 5BX booklet and 3 10BX booklets, one for each member of the family. I was never good at being a regular exerciser, but my mom has done her 10BX routine her whole life. She eventually lost her book, but she still does her routine 3 times a week. She's not tapered off, though, still stuck at the highest level she got to, and she's not growing old and wily. She's not growing old willingly, smiley face. What a great memory. Thanks for the show. Cool, eh?
Yeah. The whole subject of exercise and continuing it is an important one, I think. It's a good subject to discuss.
Yeah, could get a series anytime soon. All we need is more people to send in shows, Dave.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah.
Never, how come we've never mentioned that before?
It just came up. It's just amazing.
Right. Password Generator by Zoke. Aaron had a comment about Haystack Password Generator. And this, what do you think about the Haystack Password Generator by grc.com, who's got a password generator? So, pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember looking at that at some stage. Is it not a JavaScript thing that you can access on his page? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Can't remember. Yeah, it looked pretty good from what I could tell. And he seems to know what he's doing is Mr. GRC, whose name's escaped me.
Gibson.
Yes. Thank you. Gibson Research Corporation or something. Yep. So 2395 is the comment number 1, which is a hookah's show on Obamacare. BJB says, thanks. Thanks for your economic series. I find it very interesting.
That's very pretty true. Cool. Yeah. Comment 5 to Dummy, using super glue to create landmarks and keyboards, and replying to comments from the community episode. I agree that I might be able to get permission to use work resources on my own time, assuming there is information I'm legally bound not to reveal and doesn't contain proprietary information. But asking for that permission is more effort than I want to make. I'll see what I can muster about work resources. Yeah, oh yeah, this was him. We asked during his show, he was talking about work stuff. And we were saying, oh, go on, get it and stuff. So ask, you never know.
Yes. I don't think we were suggesting that he break any confidences or anything like that. But his mainframe experiences and so forth. I think there's a whole fund of useful and interesting information there that
absolutely
one would like to hear more.
And you know, if he can't talk about his own experiences, he could talk about Bob's experiences in a fictitious company working on mainframes.
Absolutely,
Bob's very handy, or his friend. Abina?
So,
Robin, how about that, Robin? Comment six, yes.
DODD dummy, the way I say it. Anyway, it says control versus function keys. In the Ogcast Planet IRC channel in Freenode, Klaatu mentioned the use for this that more people might have. I had it myself and didn't consider using this. Use this to distinguish between the left control and function keys on laptops. For example, control is usually in the bottom leftmost position on HP laptops, whereas those two keys are reversed on Lenovo's. I've used this method to mark the control on both. For what it's worth, I decided to use three dots of superglue on a horizontal line on the key because sometimes my finger hits that key in different places. I chose to mark the control instead of the function key because the control is the one I need to use most often and the control key is not in the same position relative to the function key on different keyboards.
That makes perfect sense to me.
It's a great idea. I do like this idea. It's really, really very clever.
Oh, yes, you like this? But my ironing board one, Dave. My ironing board one. Yeah.
Oh, that, typical. But there was no super glue. I mean, if there'd been dots on it, then that would have been a whole different ballgame.
Anyway, there was a big discussion on Information Underground Co-op Paradise where the guys were discussing how to start your own server co-op. And Shane Shannon says, well done. This was a fun episode because of the enthusiasm of the presenters. Some intriguing ideas.
And BJB, comment three says, indie hosting. Would you be willing to provide DNS secondary or backup email services? I run my own DNS server and email server, but it's a challenge to find the secondaries to make my services a bit more robust. I don't really want close friends to do this. I'd like it to be cast a little wider. It's even hard to convince the ISPs to do it, sadly, but it's hard to find like-minded people. You guys sound about right, smiley face. And if you like, I can secondary for you as well.
To which I replied, do a show on how to set it up on something like a Raspberry Pi, and I'll be happy to join a pool as well. I have here a fixed IP address with no port restrictions, so that's something we can do. It's all something I've always wanted to do, is just mirror my own DNS. I have no idea how to do it, but I have plenty of smaller domains that I'm happy to test it on.
Yeah. The last comment, five, from Silver on the same show. Alternate web server. Nginx is a great alternative to Apache web server, says Silver.
Yeah, a lot of people use it for static web pages and for cloud as well. So, Call of Klaatu, HPR Audiobook Club.
Cthulhu,
yes, obviously. Just said that deliberately so that you correct me. DODDDOMI says, there is a link to the audio. Is there a link to the audio you listen to? Is there a link in the audiocast in the show notes of the episode? If so, I didn't see it, but I miss it a lot. I found it by looking in the last book club episode. If it's not, it might be worth adding to the next one. Would be a good idea, actually.
Yeah. Comment for El Musol, file unavailable. Plus one for DODD's dummies comment above. I'm getting lost in the D's there. However, and he does a W get minus C on Call of Cthulhu and gets a 403 forbidden error back. So,
yeah, I think I've just opened it in Firefox and it works okay. If wget is not working on there, you might want to try and spoof your user agent, I would say. Okay. And if you want, if you want, maybe should do a show about stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
But I don't have time, Dave. Sorry, I really genuinely don't have time. I need to fix this Git mess and stuff.
So the last comment in the old comments that we like to do is to episode 406 in 2009,
Whoa.
Moonshine by Klaatu, and it's Cobra 2 who was actually being interviewed, if I remember correctly. He says, show notes, reference to unixporn.com needs to be updated to unixporn.pro. We have lost the original domain, and it now links to not safe for work content. Well, I did. I edited that show and put a little editor's note against it. I didn't comment it, but I assumed anybody seeing the comment will also see the that the notes had been modified.
Link adjusted in accordance with comment one. That's pretty clear, I think. Who is it? Another XKCD. Or eventually all websites redirect to a porn site.
It's the whole domain thing of domains falling off.
Yeah, exactly.
The edge of the world is a total pain. It's
It is when you're doing a project like this HBR. It's really it's been fascinating for me. The stuff that you think helping out on a network like this would be about actually turns out most of your time is spent thinking about, you know, really weird issues like how to get more people involved and the ratios of people who contribute to stuff. So you end up listening to shows on crowdsourcing or whatever, and the whole archivist problem because our shows are around so long. It's just fascinating. It's a really fantastic opportunity we've had, Dave.
Yeah.
I know I've been a bit down and depressed, but that probably has a lot to do with the Northern Hemisphere and the light disappearing.
Vitamin D shortage is the problem, yeah.
But it really is fascinating, the issues that we deal with here compared to like stuff that we deal in work about maximum availability and high thingy. You know, this is completely different kettle of fish, you know, long-term RSS feeds that are going to be polled in the hours, in the magnitudes of 24 hours as opposed to like microseconds, and you're dealing with years as opposed to months. It's just a very unique sort of project that's going on here, and it's
absolutely
fascinating to work on it.
It is. Yes. The longevity issue is a fascinating one, because I was interested to. I am interested to look at other people in their relationship with archive.org, and quite a lot of people use it as a repository for their audio.
But
they don't do what we're doing and put the entire, or attempt anyway, to put the entire episode up there so that, you know, you can follow HBR on archive.org pretty much.
Yeah.
But you can't see the comments, you know. So I'm a great advocate of what we're doing, actually. So
it's tough. It is tough what we're doing, what you're doing particularly. And it's disheartening that that, you know, the resources that are being given to us kindly, and every time I have to fire off an email to Josh and I go, not again, you know, this he must also wake up, oh god, this guy's complaining again about something. And you know, if I know for myself that if I was paying for this in work, at the level of response I get, not necessarily this work, but the amount of commitment that Josh has to it, really, this an honest host, if you wanted to recommend an honest host to your company, I really would do it without a problem. Absolutely no problem. It's the level of service that you get from essentially a few guys is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
Absolutely agree.
When you look back maybe on the year and the number of different shows that we've got in about different topics, it has been absolutely fascinating. It's been awesome.
Yes. Oh yes, absolutely. We don't stop and think about this often enough, perhaps.
Yeah, I think we actually should do. And speaking of a time when you can sit back, relax, and talk about stuff that's coming up, is the New Year show by Put on put on this year again, like last year by Honky Magoo, who have offered to look after HBR New Year's show event again this year. They say, we plan on starting on 2017-12-31-T-10-0-0-0-0. So 21st of December at 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will stop the recording and the stream as long as there is no one on at 2018-01-01-T-12-0-0-0-0-Zulu. At 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. If people are still on, we'll keep the stream and the recording going. For further details are available on the mailing list and on the Linux Logcast website. So we will, I'll probably start the stream. I'll start the stream on at the time, 10 Zulu. And we will then continue on. Probably be cool. Up before that and probably after it. And thanks again for Honky for taking this over. And I know Kevin is involved in that and loads of other people. So it's really cool that they're doing it, that I don't need to worry about that, because it's basically now, it last year was so much more relaxed for me that I could just take the time with the kids and chill out. And then actually coming up to the mic and then having a chat with people was just nice. So what I'd like is people to come on and amid all the talking and stuff, just tell us what your coolest show was for the year and what surprised you, what you'd like to hear more about and stuff like that. And also please remember to type in links in the Ether chat or put them in the stream or somewhere, so that it makes it a lot easier for people to get the show notes. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Looking forward to that.
Notes would be good. So while we're on the any other business, I just comment that, as I like to do, that we had a couple of contributions to the tag and summary update project from Windigo and BJB in the last month. So we're gradually whittling away at that particular problem. So thanks to them.
Cool. Thanks, Dave. And thanks for doing that. Thanks, guys.
Do you want to check the mailing list at all? Or
yep. I don't think there's a lot this year, this month, is
there? There isn't a huge lot, no.
Goes like that sometimes. Ham Radio Roundtable, stevesaner.net. I was putting that on. The site is down, continuing issues with people. All I can say is, yeah, stick with us, folks. It's HBR might not be here today, but it will definitely be here tomorrow. So, I've whined on enough about that. Focus more on the positive, the really cool stuff that people have done. And if you have not submitted a show this year, it would be an ideal time to do it. And there are 260 nice clean slots opening up on the 1st of January. So go look forward to that coming up.
Cool.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Tune in tomorrow, folks, for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
Siegens kommt ein Stormboot aus Spanja wir an. Hi, bringt us free software. Ich sehe him all stand. Okay, folks.